Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to DNF, a podcast where we talk about Formula One. I'm Jessica Smetana. He's Spencer Hall. He is fresh from his trip back home from the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And this episode is basically going to just be me asking Spencer questions because he got to witness all of the glory, all of the pain, all of the frustrated fans in person. The Las Vegas Strip under the lights, Spencer. I have so many questions to ask you. So let's get started. First off, what are you dying to tell me right now about the weekend you just had?
Oh, I am dying to tell you that I got a head nod from Rod Stewart. That was pretty great. Oh, yeah. Little man, enormous noggin. Just an enormous Scottish skull that man has on his shoulders. So that was cool. I'm also dying to tell you that I don't think you can properly understand the scale of the race unless you were there, because it was very hard for me to wrap my head around. They really did run an entire F1 race through the middle of Las Vegas without closing the entire city down. Closing significant portions of it, yes. Closing the entire city down, absolutely not. It was, there is no underplaying it in terms of what it was in
the scale.
No, in scale or in, like, you know, somebody tipped $200,000 at the win. You know, the win, I think their total payout, they got $1 million total on the floor at the win. It was the entire F1 experience just writ large against the Vegas setting, which in itself is just, it's ludicrous. It was wild to see, like, in sum, what was it? It was a successful race. And I think that's where they wanted to land. That's where everyone wanted to land. I don't think anybody wanted this to fail. You especially don't want it to fail for all the locals on the ground and all the businesses who've been so inconvenienced by all of this. And you don't want it to be a bad race from a fan's perspective. It was none of those things. So a minor miracle can sit with major stakes and even larger like set dressing.
Yeah, well, maybe we should start with the actual race itself, because the actual race itself ended up being a pretty good race. Mm-hmm. And I think the circuit ended up surprising a lot of fans who were maybe not expecting much when they saw that the outline of the circuit looked like a pig.
Flying pig.
Yeah. And so my experience with this race was very similar to watching the Japanese Grand Prix, which is that I went to sleep and didn't watch it live and then watched it the next day, which always takes away an element of, you know, surprise. If you already know, I already knew Max Verstappen won when I woke up Sunday morning, because I can't not look at social media when I first crack my eyeballs open at the break of dawn. So, like, for me, it wasn't, you know, there was still other stuff to watch when I did my rewatch, but probably like a lot of East Coast fans, you didn't get to see the spectacle live. So I was kind of like absorbing it the next morning and ended up kind of getting the feeling that like the race itself was pretty good. It was pretty fun. There were some nice overtakes, which I definitely wasn't expecting. There were a couple safety cars. There was a real battle, I think, at the end of the race between Leclerc and Verstappen that, you know, haven't seen a ton of this season. So what about the circuit and what about this race do you think ended up making it a successful and interesting one to watch for fans.
Yeah, Max described that as fun. It's very wild to hear Max Verstappen use the word fun to describe anything, especially after the week he had in Las Vegas, because he was famously grumpy the entire time, said the track was nothing special, appeared to be very displeased with a lot of the pomp and circumstance. We do need to talk about the driver intros with, I believe that was Bruce Buffer.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. Probably the best Bruce part or Michael. Of
the weekend. I get my buffers mixed up.
Spencer, your guess is as good as mine.
I'm sorry. Yes, it was Bruce Buffer. Okay. We'll talk about Bruce Buffer. But I think a lot of the nerves came this week from the track, both from a drain hatch, a drain cover coming loose in FP1 and ruining the initial debut of the track. But I think everyone was anxious to see what it was going to look like competitively, and it turns out that the track was marvelous, was great in terms of competitive balance. It's a little baby Baku in terms of the kind of dynamics. There are long straights and these sort of catch points where everybody has to slow down and traffic can get caught up. Turn one got a little squirrely when coming through there because Max had his elbows out all day. George Russell also had his elbows out for Max. Consider, by the way, Max won this race, and George Russell just turned smack into him at one point. Like, just got full NASCAR.
Yeah, he did.
And turned right into him. A move so stunning that Max even seemed surprised by it, because it wasn't aggression. It just more seemed clumsy than anything. This was a good track for overtaking. It was a good track in terms of making up gaps. It was a great track for... I think it was a great track for straight line speed with a managed but nervy sense of when to overtake, which is why the finale where we had Charles Leclerc, I don't think there was anybody who wasn't rooting for Charles Leclerc to pass Checo Perez coming in on the last lap. That's really all you want. You want some decent overtakes. You want some good ones if you can, you know, ask for that. I think we got those. I absolutely loved love the final overtake, because visually there's nothing like watching anything under those lights. Like, everything looked fantastic. Seeing the sparks flying out from Leclerc's car as he finally went in for the number two spot almost felt like a win. Almost felt like a win for Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, so another F1 podcast I listened to, the Missed Apex pod, was talking about how they felt that the DRS lanes in this track were perfect, and what was able to allow us some real solid overtaking, which definitely was what it seemed like, and probably attributed to it actually having an excited feel to it.
Yep.
Plus, you know, the temperatures were not super hot, so there was, you know, a little bit less tire wear than normal races, I think, too, which helped. And then when you have safety cars, obviously you have people on different strategies kind of running at different times. So it adds a little element of kind of mixing things up a little bit that you don't necessarily always get in Formula One, especially at a street circuit. So yeah, it was super fun to watch the end of this race. And I also thought, like, credit to Formula One, because I think the entire idea of this Grand Prix was, what if Formula One down the strip, wouldn't that look cool to have a shot of all these cars going down the Las Vegas strip, where you have all these iconic lights and scenes and all of these things kind of happening on the sides? And it did look really cool. Like, it was visually stunning to watch. And I think that was the entire point of why they did it there, and then kind of work backwards as like, okay, so what do we logistically, what does that actually mean? We have to, you know, pay $250 to build a paddock now. We have to tear down trees in front of the Bellagio fountains. We have to erect all these grandstands. We have to screw up traffic for a few months. But that was the payoff. And I, you know, I'm not a Las Vegas local or a business owner or someone who works in one of the casinos, so I can't say if it was worth it for them. But I think ultimately for fans just watching at home, you probably were pleasantly surprised that this was, it was a treat to watch.
It was not just a treat to watch on television. It was, from every angle, if you walked around the track, it was spectacular in person as well. Huge, like any F1 event, kind of incomprehensible from the ground level. You know, you do end up watching a lot of the race if you're there in person. You end up watching a lot of the race on huge screens or on someone's television or in the media center. That still happens. But visually, I think all F1 wanted, like, from getting the first phase of practice messed up by a technical issue by some of the, yes, complaints from locals, which were 100% deserved, because the middle of town completely barricaded and cut off and rearranged for the benefit of the spaceship called F1 landing in the middle of your town. That's a lot to ask. And a lot of the initial sort of, you know, grumbles from drivers about whether it was going to happen and whether we were going to get attendance. You know, that was through FP1 and FP2. That was the question, was, you know, okay, did we overshoot demand? Was there going, or were there going to be people in the stands? Was anyone going to show up for that? Ultimately, they got what they wanted because they got a banger. That was it. It was, were we going to get a spectacle? They got one. And on top of that, as a bonus, you got a really decent racetrack out of it. Like, I like that track. I think it yields to some, like, fantastic conditions for competitive racing. That's really all they wanted. And Toto was right. Toto had this little monologue after the debacle in FP1 with the drain hatch and or the drain cover. And he said, you know, no one's going to remember this. Europeans don't even watch this. They don't even come out for this first part. And he was 100% right. Like, he was absolutely 100% right. This is there. If you want an episode title, we have a good option, but there's another title, your subtitle. Toto was right. Toto was 100% right.
Yeah, he was right about that. So do you think the race makes up for the practice debacle completely? Yeah. Do you think, like, the practice debacle now no one thinks about ever again?
No, one will think about it. It happened. It's dangerous. I was sort of stunned that there was that much of an oversight in terms of what could happen out there, especially because the drain cover thing, you know, this happened to Jenson Button at Monaco. It is, and it's happened at Baku. You would think that would be the kind of thing that they had looked at, but I also will give them this much credit. It's also the kind of issue that really only live racing conditions or live practice conditions can uncover.
It's like, if you're not super familiar with what happened, Sergio or my dog just went crazy on a treat. Carlos Sainz's Ferrari essentially sucked up a water valve cover like into his car.
Downforce so powerful that it popped it like a cork.
Yeah, and also Esteban Ocon had damage from it as well. And Formula One decided, ooh, that's a shame. So we're going to inconvenience all of the fans and not tell them that they're not going to be able to watch any of practice. But we're also going to give you a grid penalty for this, even though it's kind of our faults.
Kind of a bad night for any fans who turned out there, and a bad night for Carlos Sainz. There is the question, if you want to go like, okay, what really sort of marred the event? Like, what were the ugly points? The ugly point was nobody managing to come to a consensus about whether we were going to pardon Carlos Sainz for that, for something that he was not his fault and didn't do. That in large part had to do with certain teams maybe not wanting to make up rules on the fly. That's what I'll say. And you can imagine what teams might have issues with, say, recent FIA F1 decisions to make up rules on the fly. They were not going to accede to that. It wasn't going to happen on the ground. So it was kind of dead on arrival with, well, maybe we can make an exception for Carl.
Aren't all Formula One rules made up on the fly? Like, it does seem like every week there is a precedent that maybe had been set before that then flies out the window and a new precedent is set. And then that one doesn't matter, like, in a year anyways.
Yeah, they're a little loath to do that. And I think a practice session incident was not going to pass muster with the sort of gravity, the, like, volume of conviction that you needed, that amount of outrage that you needed. It was like, nah, it's Carlos and Ferrari. And it was a relatively small thing for everyone else. It was a big deal for Ferrari because that is an expensive repair, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, there will be some ongoing fallout from that in terms of cost because they had to do a whole new chassis. And that is the most expensive repair you can make to the car.
So we're going to get to some, we're going to get to some questions in a second. But now that you've been to all three of the current U.S. Formula One tracks, does Vegas get second billing behind Austin? Would you put it ahead of Austin? And is Miami consensus worst track now?
So from the fan track experience, COTA is king. because it is a 100% pure F1 experience. It is a great track with fantastic sight lines. I think in terms of fan experience, COTA is the best value. It is the most bang for your buck. In terms of spectacle, Vegas will not be beat. Vegas won't be beat by anyone else in terms of spectacle on the F1 schedule. Really, only Singapore comes close. And Singapore does not have a giant video ball in the middle where the Charmin bear can wave to you while you turn around its circumference. So that, to me, like, Vegas can't be equaled in terms of spectacle. And that puts Miami third. And I think that's where Miami belongs.
Yeah. So that brings me to one of the first questions from Mark Ward. What's the Sphere like in person? I have been wondering the same thing, Spencer. The Sphere, like, I want to hate it. I want to talk about how stupid it is and what a waste of money it is. But it looked really fun and cool. So what was that actually like?
In terms of a presence in the race, it's hilarious because you're watching it and your eye kind of keeps coming back to it. You can ignore it for a while and then suddenly, you know, the camera will go down and you'll see Verstappen turning around and there's a giant emoji looking at him as he turns. That's insane. They would do on the final lap. I like the thing that they did where they kind of used it as a partner in the broadcast. They would use it as commentary. They would use it as signal when the checkered flag came out, right? Like, you know, the entire sphere turned into like a checkerboard pattern and it's sitting there waving. I loved that kind of stuff. There's a limit, by the way. They steered away from red and green during the race because they were just like, if drivers see red or green, they'll just, you know, either speed up or slow down. We can't have that. So they steered away from using those colors on the sphere. You said it was stupid and a waste of money. That is correct. It is 100% all of those things. That money should have been just given to people who don't have it. However, that's not how our financial overlords work. They like to spend it on stupid loud things. If they had to spend it on a stupid loud thing, a gigantic glowing ball in the middle of Las Vegas is fine with me. I think it's a great visual element for the race. The Charmin bear appearing on it was a little disturbing. I was not ready to see the like butt wiping Charmin bear pop up.
Those bears are a little into themselves. They did a focus group on the face, right? Like they showed people a bunch of different kinds of cartoon faces and they landed on one that I actually think is pretty cute.
Yeah.
People got paid to do that, I'm assuming.
Did. No, they did. And there's another funny visual element too, like spheres over here. But then when you're going down the strip, you know, people are like, oh man, the visuals, the glamour, that's incredible. That's all true. I did laugh though, because sometimes the cars would go by some of the shittiest casinos, like, you know, or hotels like Polo Towers. Polo Towers is in the back of some of the shots. Casino Royale, where I have lost tens of dollars playing blackjack switch. Casino Royale is there. Nice. Casino Royale is the place that I believe still has a Burger King in the back.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Casino Burger King.
Yes, because the Casino Burger King got F1 time, which I love.
Can we talk about the Bruce Buffer thing really quick? I don't think we spent enough time on it. So he was announcing the drivers. And if you haven't seen this video yet, please watch this video. It is so funny. Sergio Perez had no idea where he was supposed to go. And so he just awkwardly stands there while Bruce Buffer's like screaming his name in his face. It was one of the funniest things I've probably seen from an F1 race this year.
So in person, it was even funnier because Buffer, if you hire Bruce Buffer, you get 110% of Bruce Buffer's effort and focus for that moment. Bruce Buffer was in the tunnel, like the path, the tunnel between the grid or the paddock and the grid, right? So he's in the tunnel when I was walking by him and he's bouncing. He's going like up and down, right? He's amped. Like when he comes out, he is prepared. He's also going to pronounce everyone's name loudly and correctly. So he gets out there with Sergio Perez and the drivers don't really know what to do with him and they don't really know where to stop for interviews because there's a lot going on. There's a car that's supposed to get in over here, there's Bruce Buffer, and there's the commentator who's going to interview them, who's, you know, weaving in and out of things. And Bruce Buffer, somebody told Checo to sort of go in, I guess, at the wrong time, so he goes, Sergio, Checo, Perez, and Checo's right there. Like it's like like the camera pans for maximum comedic effect, and they're face to face with each other.
And he just stands there.
And he just stands there.
And he doesn't leave.
Who doesn't leave? Doesn't know what to do. Is great. It was great. And I totally identify with Checo there because I'm sure he was like, I have no idea. Nobody's told me what to do. I'm just where? Huh? Excuse me. Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to do this. We don't need to do these intros. What are we doing here? I have no idea where. It's like when you have a wedding and you do the rehearsal and they're like, oh, so you're just going to go down there and then you stand there and then you do this and this. And then it's like, wait, I didn't catch that. What, mm-hmm. what am I supposed to do? Everyone's looking at me now. We're on TV.
Yeah.
Another question, Spencer, that I really want to talk about. What would each of you purchase at the merch stand with a $200 voucher? So I thought that Formula One handled the practice session debacle for the fans incredibly poorly. They didn't tell the fans that they weren't going to resume until right before, and then the fans had to leave because it took too long to figure out if, you know, things would be fixed or not. And then there was a long delay, and then fans who were waiting had to go home because it was too long, and people that worked mm-hmm. the event had essentially like timed out, I guess, and couldn't work anymore. So it was a huge lack of communication, kind of clusterfuck. And there's a class action lawsuit now among fans who are pissed that they got like 8 minutes of practice, yep. Which, you know, also worth noting, the practice sessions are the least expensive event to go to. So people who don't have thousands of dollars to spend on the Grand Prix probably spent a decent amount of money to watch practice and then didn't get anything for it. Mm-hmm. Didn't get really treated like the, you know, fans of the sport and the paying customers that they were. And so Formula One puts out a statement, not apologizing, but just being like, hey, sometimes shit happens. And then they put out a further statement saying, hey, here's a $200 voucher to the merch store. We're not going to refund your tickets, but you can knock yourselves out. And it's worth noting that a merch store baseball cap with Formula One branding, the last time I went to a race, cost $90. Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of stuff that you could probably get. Also, at that point, you probably just want cash. You probably do not want yes. a sweatshirt or one of their little Vegas like t-shirt things. That's going to cost like $150, right?
Yeah, this is correct. I would want, if I had $200 to spend, I'm going to put it towards what I think is the best looking piece of F1 gear, which is the orange McLaren jacket. If you can get an orange McLaren rain jacket, one, practical, two, high vis. So if you're in an environment where you safety is a concern, 100% the go. And three, it's, you know, it's adjacent to Florida colors, so I can go ahead and work it into the existing sporting scheme. That's what I would put it towards.
Yeah, I do the girl math thing where I'm like, if I have $200 for free, that means if I spend like $300, it's still free.
Yeah,
because I'm like 2/3 of
savings
it is
because
free.
Savings.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm probably splurging on like a McLaren hoodie, which I was just telling Doug this, our producer, but I got a McLaren hoodie last year at the Austin race, and it is made of like the finest silk. It is like the comfiest mm-hmm. thing. I will say their stuff is very, very expensive, but the quality is there. It is my favorite hoodie. And I've been mad at myself for like a year because I got it like, it's probably like a half size too small. So the sleeves like ride up when I wear it. So I don't wear it that much, but I love it. It is gorgeous. This now has turned into a commercial for the merch store. But if you have $200, maybe you'll get like one thing. Because
I think the secret is if
Formula One's expensive.
If you have $200 to spend at the Formula One shop, you have a nice start.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's mm-hmm. right. You can get a keychain.
Yeah.
And a hat.
Oh, yeah. I came back and told my kids, I was like, here, you've got some cheaper stuff because I'm not buying you. I'm not buying a 10-year-old a $100 piece of clothing.
No, unless that's ridiculous.
Like a coat. Yeah.
Here's a cheat code. Go on Etsy and there's fan-made Formula One merch mm-hmm. that is not even like less than a fourth of the cost of the officially licensed stuff. And it's all cute. I got my friend a hand embroidered like Monaco Grand Prix hoodie mm-hmm. for her birthday. That was like probably $40 or $50. It's so much cuter than probably a lot of the stuff you can get at Formula One races. And someone like an actual like real person probably made it. And you won't spend $3,000 on a baseball cap.
Yeah.
So
Etsy
plug.
There is a question I do want to address in here, which is which we'll have to do a correction and a correction and answer on, which is from That's a Plain 08. I'm not the biggest fan of him, but is Stroll one of the more underrated drivers on the grid? 19th to 4th is pretty amazing. Or is that strategy and safety car playing a part of it? I thought we were talking about Esteban Ocon here. Esteban Ocon is the one whose delta was absolutely bonkers, because I believe he qualified 17th overall. Qualified 17th and ended up finishing in 4th. That is lunatic performance.
Yeah.
Right, from Alpine.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So Lance Stroll finishing in the top five was something that, like, when I woke up Sunday, I was like, wait a second. I'm like, what happened here?
Well, based on qualifying alone and on some of the practice runs, the reliance on straight line speed and a couple of the penalties and the way things shook out meant that there could have been some serious surprises. Okay, coming out of qualifying, yeah. Remember, there were two Williams in the top 10. Right, because Albon and Logan Sargeant were respectively 6th and 7th coming into it, and they looked good. They looked game. They looked 100% ready to put up a serious result. So I even had a couple of people who were betting on like outside podium for Albon, just because they were performing so well. Is Stroll underrated? No, I think he's probably the beneficiary more than anyone else, more than or as much as Ocon, of this track's individual quirks of the sort of straight line speed leading to decent overtake, leading to a couple of aberrant results there. I don't think he's underrated 100%, but it's good for him.
He's probably like, properly rated, like of properly, the yeah. of the drivers who. Like have their seats and there's not really that many this year on the grid, but historically, like yeah. he's not that bad of a driver. He's actually delivered some impressive results, but he also is not a driver of the caliber of any of the like top, you know, 7 or 8 guys that you actually think could compete for a championship in yeah. the right circumstances. And as we've seen, like, this is a little bit of recency bias. It's also a little bit of like, he got, I don't want to say lucky, but like he was able to take advantage of the turn one fiasco in this race, right? And gain a lot of positions yep. that way. And he's like I said, he's not a bad driver. He's not going to like put it into the wall mm-hmm. on turn one for no reason.
He was
like,
he was opportunistic this race.
Yeah.
And he had
yeah.
good pace. That's it.
Yes.
Good pace, opportunistic, took advantage of it. Congratulations to Lance Stroll. It was a very strong showing. I mean, he's no Esteban Ocon, but you know, he's certainly not Alex Albon. Who, by the way, when you talk to F1 people, Albon is one of those guys who people just, his value is, you want to talk about underrated. Like, I think everybody knows he's good driver in a crap mm-hmm. car, but I think that maybe our understanding of how well he's valued among F1 people, right, among back-end people, like in mm-hmm. the paddock, I think that we might be undervaluing that.
So he's underrated. And yeah. Stroll is properly rated. Who is Lance overrated?
Lance Stroll, properly rated. Albon, underrated, even in terms of people who already know that he is, you know, a valuable asset. Overrated? God, that's such a terrible word.
It really is not nice. Also,
it is a not nice word, especially when you're talking about people who are not always in control of their circumstances, right?
Oh, 100%. Yes. I mean, you talk about this in other sports all the time, right? Like, you have to have a little bit of luck, a little bit of right place and right time and talent to be successful in most sports where you're not, you know, team sports, especially. We watched Patrick Mahomes throw a beautiful football last night to a receiver who dropped it went through his hands to win the game. So.
I'll tell you, like, this for this race and this race only, in terms of overrated, the entire Alfa Romeo team. I know you go, man, we're not expecting much from them. They delivered less.
okay, I want to talk about Valtteri's butt calendar in a second, but no pun intended with that transition. Doug just sent this screenshot from someone on Twitter who posted a picture of a Ferrari hoodie that was on sale for $328 at the Las Vegas. So if you got a $200 voucher, you couldn't even buy a Ferrari branded Puma hoodie because you would
128 plus tax to get there.
Yeah, you would still have to spend like another $200 to bring that sucker home. That's just unbelievable. Also, Spencer, a kid's sweater, $180 for a kid's Mercedes hoodie.
Don't buy a kid $180 anything. Like, just
don't buy a kid. Don't have.
They're
going to
destroy it.
Don't kids. No, sorry, that's my own personal bias. Anyways, yeah, where are we?
I also wanted to take Dakota Moyer's question because it's an interesting one for the American perspective. If Las Vegas has celebrities, the atmosphere, good racing, and overtakes, then what's the purpose of Miami? It's a good question.
It's a good question. This is kind of what I was saying when they announced the Las Vegas race. I was like, I feel like there's a lot of overlap between the kind of fans and the kind of celebrities that Formula One wants to attract to races. Like, I don't necessarily know if you're going to pick one of these races, if you're going to do Miami or Las Vegas, why you'd pick Miami when it's like outside in 95 degree weather in essentially a parking lot. And it's now we've had 2 years of sample size and it hasn't been that good of a race.
Yeah.
Whereas Vegas, like, there's always celebrities around. It's got proximity to LA. It has had a better race. It's a small sample size again, but I don't know. What do you think?
Ditch it. Just trash it. Yeah, I do not enjoy the Miami race experience because the weather is oppressive. The logistics of getting to and fro don't compare to either Austin or to Vegas, right? Just because of where the track is and where all the things you want to do in Miami are, they are not one and the same. It is not a great track in terms of competitive racing or setup. It doesn't
drivers generally don't like it.
It doesn't have any of the spectacle that Vegas has. It doesn't have any of the sort of compelling technical racing and classic F1 experience that COTA has, you know. It's not, in terms of a fan experience, it doesn't compare to either of them, because I will say this, as restrictive as the Vegas experience might have been for fans, the people I talked to who paid money for tickets enjoyed it. And two, there were a lot of sneaky ways to watch the race in Vegas because it's impossible to close the circuit. My favorite being fans who were, there were all of these overhead pedestrian bridges that they essentially blocked off. I thought they were going to be blacked out so that you couldn't walk over and watch the race from them. No, they were kind of meshed out. So you could still very much see the race as long as you kept moving, because they had security guards who were trying to keep people from clogging the bridges, keeping people moving. So there were people who just walked back and forth, up and down the escalators, watching the race. As long as they kept moving, nobody had a problem with them. So there were some people who got a free race that way. Shouts out to them. I thought that was very clever. Miami doesn't compare. So I think that's an issue for Miami. The money's still there. Obviously, Stephen Ross really wants that race to continue happening in Miami. If there's a difference between the two, it's that Miami's a little closer for the European crowd. And I think there's a sort of greater familiarity and literacy with Miami for them. I think for Americans, though, like we said, it goes Austin, Vegas, Miami. It doesn't seem mandatory in the league.
Yeah, I mean, that being said, like, if the Vegas race and the Austin race, I mean, none of this really works in a free market, but if they're able to like make the prices for Miami more like appropriate for fans, and it's not, it's less like hospitality driven, yeah, and like VIP ticket driven, and there are people who can actually afford to go, I think that there, it is a good option, because like it's a, you know, it's on the East Coast. It's not out of the, it's not out of the way for a lot of fans, like you said, like, no, act like real fans, not like the VIP people that can fly in on their private jets and like spend, right, a ton of money on it.
Jessica, yeah, you just said make a Miami event more inclusive.
Basically. Yeah, I know. That's like, it's like, it's not probably going to happen. I like, I also, right, think they probably would need to make a few track adjustments there to make it a better overall race. Like I think actually I want Doug to put in Max Verstappen's whole 2 minute long answer to the question about racing in Las Vegas here, because I thought that he actually gave a pretty thoughtful answer to the question. And we'll put that in right now. You can listen to that and then we'll discuss it.
I can go on for a long time, but I feel like, of course, a kind of show element is important, but I lack emotion. And for me, when I was a little kid, it was about the emotion of the sport, what I fell in love with, and not the show of the sport around it, because that's, I think as a real racer, that shouldn't really matter. I mean, a car, first of all, a racing car, Formula One car, anyway, on a street circuit, I think doesn't really come alive. It's not that exciting. I think it's more about just the proper racetracks. You know, when you go to Spa, Monza, you know, these kind of places, they have a lot of emotion and passion. And for me, you know, seeing the fans there is incredible. And for us as well, when I jump in the car there, I'm fired up and I love driving around these kind of places. And of course, I understand that fans, they need maybe something to do as well around a track. But I think it's more important that you actually make them understand what we do as a sport, because most of them just come to have a party, drink, see a DJ play or a performance act. I mean, I can do that all over the world. I can go to Ibiza and get completely shit-faced and, you know, have a good time. But that's what happens, you know, and actually people, they come and they become fan of what? They want to see maybe their favorite artist and have a few drinks with their mates and then go out and have a crazy night out. But they don't actually understand what we are doing and what we are putting on the line, you know, to perform. And I think if you would actually invest more time into the actual sport, what we're actually trying to achieve here, you know, to, as a little kid, we grew up wanting to be a world champion. If I think the sport would put more focus onto these kind of things and also explain more what a team is doing, you know, throughout the season, what they are achieving, what they are working for. These kind of things I find way more important to look at than just having all these random shows all over the place. For me, yeah, it's not what I'm very passionate about, and I lack passion and emotion with these kind of places, which I love Vegas, but not to drive in a fun car. I love to go out, have a few drinks, throw everything on red or whatever, you know, to be a bit crazy, have a nice food. But like I said, emotion, passion, it's not there compared to some old school tracks.
What did you think of Max's answer there, Spencer?
I think he's 100% correct, because the way that the sport is experienced at the continental level, and then the way the sport is sold internationally, those are two different things. By the way, I say international, I just mean not European. Those, yeah, European races, you know, when he talks about classic tracks like Monza, that's true. That's all 100% true. On the whole, as Americans, we're overcharged for sports. Oh, we are. Yeah. We pay a ridiculous premium for sports, and which seems sort of antithetical to the notion that television money should end up lowering these prices. No, the live experience ends up becoming an even pricier proposition, and I don't think that's good for the long-term health of the sport. But at the same time, too, it's very much a practice. I think that over time, those prices will come down, hopefully. I don't think they'll ever be the great value that, you know, a motorsports experience like NASCAR will be, but I think over time, if you develop that kind of thing and make it more accessible, I think people would turn it into something that they do in person. But the idea of making American racing more accessible and a better value for fans. I think that's something they should really look into, especially now having done Coda, which does a much, much better job than either the Miami or the Vegas race in terms of making those things accessible.
Yeah. You know,
it's never going to be cheap. I don't think that's how F1 will ever roll. But in terms of a better...
They're selling $300 hoodies.
Correct. But in terms of a fan experience, yeah. No, I mean, I don't think he lied.
Yeah, I think that he hit on something that I also agree with, which is that there's been so much investment, especially because this Vegas race was a Formula One promoted race. Like the first race that Formula One itself is putting on, it's not put on by like Stephen Ross and, you know, Hard Rock Entertainment or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is Formula One's race. They're promoting it. They're putting it on. They're investing the money into the paddock and all of the infrastructure. There is so much money being put into that and not enough money being put into the overall fan experience of like really understanding the sport, really understanding what's at stake for them. Like if you're a driver, you don't want to be, you know, risking your life to go at 200 miles per hour down a straightaway while someone's listening to like Tiesto five yards away from you, not aware of what's going on. Like I do empathize with the fact that like drivers feel like maybe, you know, they're not getting enough of the attention here because there's so much, like, I guess like you could argue that like, you know, putting a concert at an F1 race is an investment in a fans. Like you're trying to give the fans like this festival experience. But
the concerts for all of the fans I know. And I talked to like, everybody goes, oh, I talked to a lot of fans. Okay. Listen, I talked to like 12.
That's like, a lot. That's a big sample size.
Right. Yeah. I was like, okay, let's get a good sample size. Right. And like nine of them were not people that I knew. So, and talking to people who did that and talking to, yes, 12 people, the concerts and the kind of the extras, people like that. You know, like that is like at Coda, you know, hey, the Killers are playing tonight. That was very much a, I'm going to take time out of my day to do that because I think a lot of the ancillary stuff, a lot of the secondary stuff, that kind of spectacle, fans do value that, right? Mm-hmm. That's something I've heard consistently that they do enjoy that. In terms of, by the way, one benefit of Vegas that all of the entertainment, all of your options are very close. Like I think logistically, people focused a lot on how the logistics were difficult in Vegas. And I think that largely most of the brunt of that fell on locals. And I don't think they were happy about that at all. I will also say, I think a lot of the local benefits thus far from what I've seen were top heavy. A lot of the drivers and a lot of the off strip places, it was a normal Vegas weekend. A lot of the places that were in the strip and were closer to that, closer to the sort of the nucleus of the F1 spectacle, they killed it. You know, those people did not go far. They largely stuck to the Bellagio, to the Venetian, to Aria. They were very much right around the grandstand. So as a concentrated experience, I think that benefited the fans who attended. I think anyone looking for a future in attending in the future, I think there are also ways to do it where maybe you're not spending the entire earth to do that. I know on Friday night, because I looked, you could get a hotel room on the strip for like $70 a night.
That's crazy. Yeah. I think that's like the balance though, that Formula One needs to find is like, do things that fans will be excited for, like have a concert there that your fans are interested in, but don't let it take away so much from the actual sport itself. Like,
yeah.
There has been so much of the push and pull between like entertainment versus sporting competition over the last couple of years as Formula One's become more popular with especially the American fans who watch Drive to Survive, that I think it sounds like at least Max Verstappen's feeling that, and he feels like there needs to be a better balance. And so a race like this that's at 10 o'clock local time, which none of the drivers wanted, none of them ended up liking.
None of them knew the time. When I interviewed Liam Lawson, he's like, yeah, I have no clue what time it is right now. I am. George Russell said he'd taken four naps. I can just tell you.
Yeah.
Personally, I took two naps on Saturday of like 15 to 20 minutes each. And it still quite wasn't enough to keep up with the demand that the schedule placed on everyone. So I think that start time's going to come up. That was one thing I heard repeatedly from people who were involved with the race, that the start time was going to end up changing. Also, let me Let me answer this question, because this is another Vegas-specific question, also kind of a weather dork question from Hannah. How should the track have been changed to not being so slick? Okay, you're not really going to change the surface. It's a new surface. It is a road-driving surface, by the way. If you want to drive the Vegas course, congratulations, you can.
Go for it in person.
Yeah, anyone can do it, because those are public roads. Vegas has an interesting thing because it was one, people go, ooh, it was cold. Okay, it was 55 degrees, 55, 60 degrees at race time, and depending on where you were on the track. So a little colder than I think F1's used to. Two, Vegas is a little more humid than people know. Vegas is, I think there was 40 to 50% ambient humidity at the time. And then there was the constant issue of you're in a desert and there's dust, right? So you have dusty track, you have a cold track. That, you know, where it's difficult to warm up the tires. Lando's crash was terrifying.
Yeah.
Like a real offer, like a serious, like accident that was caused by lack of traction, which is going to be an issue whenever you have cold tires and kind of a moist, dusty area, right? Because remember, Vegas is where they have water. That's why the city's there, right? That's why there are fields. That's what Las Vegas means. Mm-hmm. That's where there's water. So, There's even some wetlands, like a small little pocket of wetlands down there. So it is a wetter environment than you think, and it was a colder environment than everyone, I think, anticipated.
So overall, Spencer, as we wrap this, you had a positive experience here. Were you surprised by it? Were you expecting it to be more of a shit show than, we were expecting? Like, what was your overall takeaway from being there and watching this live?
It was overwhelming. It was like, that's the word, is that by scale and by experience, it was an overwhelming project, I think, for everybody involved. And having a great race at the end of that was the relief cannot begin to express, I think, the feeling that I think most people had involved, because nobody wants this to fail. Like, nobody,
of the locals, maybe.
I don't, I think the locals, okay, several of the locals might have wanted it to fail, right? Like the Uber drivers, the Uber drivers and cabbies that I talked to did not seem overly thrilled, because I don't think the business was living up to what they thought it was going to be. Again, remember, this was a very top-down benefit, I think, for everybody in Vegas, and it was mostly concentrated around the strip. But overall, in terms of drivers, in terms of everybody, like Max is the poster boy for this race. Max Verstappen, his entire week. Say what you will about Max, I love the fact that Max is 100% himself at all times, and you are getting an honest and accurate answer. I think he sees things very coldly, and I think sometimes you need that when you're talking about a sport where there's this much passion and this much, you know, reality distorting money involved. Yeah. And Max was the race. Max came in and said, this track is not special. This experience is, you know, too much. You know, I feel like a clown sitting up there. I think those are all completely accurate representations of the Vegas experience. That on the front end, it was a little discombobulated to a lot discombobulated, loud, cartoonish, a bit much. At one point, I heard one journalist say, you know, what are they doing to our sport? This was pre-race, which accurate. 100% accurate. We talked on the show.
It's giving like they massacred my boy energy.
A little bit.
That's why I'm laughing.
It's right.
Not true. It's just.
But then the race happened.
Marlon Brando-esque.
And the race was the best, one of the best, if not the best of the season in terms of drama. Right?
Yeah.
So they didn't massacre your boy. They did give your boy a makeover. And at the end, the boy ended up being pretty happy with it. Max Verstappen in the Elvis suit, driving around on the victory lap, singing Viva Las Vegas pipe through his headphones, made me cackle, because I think for everybody, it was a collective breath of relief. Not only that it was over, but that despite everyone's reservations, it ended up being kind of brilliant. There we go. That's my review. Kind of brilliant. Like, I know, like, my favorite is when, like, the hardcore cynical UK journalism crew, they see everything with an extremely critical eye, and they were like, pretty good race. When they say pretty good race, that means for everybody else, like, oh, it was fantastic.
That was great. Yeah,
yeah, it was unreal.
Well, This has been fun, Spencer. I'm glad that you were able to go. I'm glad that you had a positive experience. I think you can just like get a transcript of the last 5 minutes of this, and that's your story. That's the finale of your story. This is the first time we've probably ever done a episode of DNF where we haven't said the name Lewis Hamilton.
Not once.
Not a single time. But we'll be back after the season finale of Formula One next week, I believe. And hopefully everyone has a happy Thanksgiving. If you celebrate Thanksgiving, if you're eating turkey this week, enjoy it. But I'm happy that it didn't end in the disaster that it began in. That was my takeaway.
Yeah. In other words, a delicious meal for everybody was had.
Oh, well. And I will be having another one on Thursday.
Bye, y'all.